Good morning, everyone. It was the formal beginning of the debate in Washington on health care reform, and it sounded like this.
When it comes to health care spending, we are on an unsustainable course that threatens the financial stability of families, businesses, and government itself. And this is not news to the American people, who over the last decade have seen their out-of-pocket expenses soar, health care costs rise, and premiums double at a rate four times faster than their wages.
The president, of course, is right. Nothing about what he said yesterday was news to the American people, but how the debate on health care reform proceeds in Washington will make news over the next several months if the process results in actual health care reform. And the way the debate began yesterday sounded very, very familiar to Henry J. Aaron, who joins us now. He's a health economist at the Brookings Institution and was a member of the Carter administration when that administration attempted to deal with health care reform. Henry Aaron, first of all, thanks for joining us.
Glad to be with you.
And the beginning yesterday involved a coalition of industry, private sector, individual players in healthcare, and, of course, the president as the main public player in healthcare, coming together for a voluntary series of cost-cutting moves that involve creating incentives for people and the healthcare industry to do better to control costs. Does that sound familiar to you?
Quite. It's the same group, more or less, that came together in 1977 with something that was then called the voluntary effort to slow the growth of hospital spending. I think there's a key difference, however, between then and now. Whether it turns out to be significant in the long run, we'll have to wait and see. But the objective turned out to be, in 1977, that the effort was a device for stalling the administration's effort to achieve economies, to stop legislation that would have put the federal government into the business of hospitals and pharmaceutical companies and so on. This may be a rather different situation because I think the administration has been very successful in communicating an inclusive tone to the effort to fashion health care reform, bringing in members of Congress and major interest groups. So yesterday's event was a good sign. It lacked specifics, and the claimed savings are rather large.
$2 trillion over 10 years.
$2 trillion, yes. Yep. And the proposal or the letter from the groups did not indicate exactly how that would be done. That's going to be a task, I think, for legislation than for the voluntary behavior by individual groups.
Well, we did a little bit of the math yesterday here on The Takeaway. It appears over 10 years you would expect to spend about $23 trillion on health care, reduce it by $2 trillion, you're down to $21 trillion. That's still a huge amount of money. But let's talk about the incentives for a minute while we wait for legislation. And I think, unlike the Carter experience, there is an expectation that things will change with the momentum that Barack Obama appears to have. But aren't the incentives all on the side of acute care, not preventive care and the sort of behavioral changes that President Obama was talking about? Health care companies get paid for sick people, not well people, period, the end.
They do get paid for sick people. The idea that through behavioral change we're going to deal successfully with rising health care costs, unfortunately, is a delusion. This issue has been studied extremely carefully by numerous scholars. And a lead article in the New England Journal of Medicine about 6 months ago listed preventive care as number one on the list of remedies that wouldn't achieve significant long-term savings. The problem is, I hate to say this at breakfast time, but we're all going to die, and we're all going to fight that. So this is a bit like the old service station advertisement, you pay me now or you pay me later.
Mr. Aaron, I think the fact that we're all going to die is also not news to the American people.
No, it isn't. But it means that there are going to be expensive illnesses.
Yeah, but the incentives question is big.
Well, Henry Aaron, the health economist at the Brookings Institute, we're going to take a look at what those incentives mean to individuals who are attempting to figure out where their incentives lie in health care. Henry Aaron served as the Assistant Secretary of Planning and Evaluation at the Department of Health, Education, and Welfare during the Carter administration. He's also a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution. Thank you, Henry.
You're welcome.
Well, you know, we've got Dean Karlan now, who's a behavioral economist at Yale University and co-founder of StickK.com. It's a site where you can form commitment contracts to help yourself with your personal goals. Now, Dean, I just want to get right into this because we heard from Henry Aaron of the Brookings Institution, and he used the word illusion to talk about these incentives of change. You know, illusion is a strong word. I mean, do you really think it's BS that people are going to change if there's incentives?
So, first of all, I think the simplicity is really what makes it work. I mean, do incentives matter? I think there's more or less no doubt in the world of prices that as price goes up, we buy less of things. Price goes down, we buy more. I don't think there's any delusion whatsoever that people respond to price. The question about healthcare in particular, is what prices do people respond to most on healthcare, and how can you make them more aware of those prices to help them guide them towards the choices that they want to make themselves?
Well, you know, this is one of those things where some people really think that this might work. I want you to listen to something from one of our listeners.
It's Steve from Chelsea, Michigan. One easy way to save money in the healthcare system to incentivize people to take care of themselves. In other words, like auto insurance, people who have more accidents pay more. People who are overweight pay more for health insurance. People who smoke pay more for health insurance. People take care of themselves, do not pay as much.
Dean, isn't that already happening in some cases? I mean, you know, there are all of these clauses about pre-existing conditions, certainly when it comes to life insurance, which is not the same as health care, but in the same general discussion, you do get penalized for smoking. You do get penalized for being overweight. Is one answer to make sure that people who jog every day and eat lots of vegetables get cheaper health insurance? What do you think of that?
No, that's exactly right to a large extent. And the key idea behind commitment contracts and stick is that for some people, they would actually prefer that. I would prefer to have it so that chocolate, M&Ms, soda are more expensive. Now, I can't control those prices directly. I can't get the M&M company to raise the price of M&Ms. But I can write a contract that helps increase the price to me personally. And I know that I'll respond to price. As price goes up, I will buy less of something. And that's the key idea behind a voluntary behavior modification approach that commitment contracts take.
So your site is called Stick. I called it Stick K because it's got two Ks, S-T-I-C-K-K. What exactly is it, and what do people use it for?
So the single most common use is weight loss. There are other uses that range from some kind of very normal type activities like smoking cessation or exercise. Some more creative uses like yelling too much, and my personal favorite is speaking too quickly to foreigners in New York City. And you know, basically, it's any behavior that you want to change. And what you do is you write a contract where you put your credit card on the website, and you say, if I don't stop this behavior, then I will owe money. And you can owe that money to either a generic charity or to your most hated charity, and it's what we call anti-charities. And the idea is that really kind of sticks it to you to help you change your behavior. And you name a friend or a colleague or a family member to hold you accountable. It's a really important part. And that person has the power to say, hey, you didn't do what you said you would do. Now you have to pay that money off to the charity or to that person as well. The money can go to the person who is supposed to hold you accountable.
All right. Quick thing from another one of our listeners.
My name is Jennifer, and I'm calling from Detroit, Michigan. And over the last 2 years, I've lost 75 pounds, and we're taking charge of our own health. And we've found that there are much fewer visits to the doctor or being more efficient with our own health care. I think it's time Americans stepped up and took responsibility of their own bodies.
Very quickly, you actually went and changed your own behavior. What did you do?
So I started doing this when I was in graduate school, and I signed a contract with a friend of mine to lose 40 pounds. And my friend also wanted to do the same, and we both lost the weight by risking that money with each other. And I've also used this for exercise contracts with friends to run on a regular basis and to get myself in the habit of being just more healthy overall.
All right. One last thing. One word. Will Americans make contracts with themselves to be healthier?
Absolutely. If they want to be healthier, then this is clearly in their incentive to do so.
All right. Dean Karlan, thanks so much. Dean Karlan, behavioral economist, Yale University, co-founder of Stick.com.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.